kind of looked like a green mouth, but where all the teeth had been smashed out of the mouth with a huge hammer. It looked like that. And then beyond that, it felt like that was where everything ended. That was where civilization ended. That was where rational thought ended. Anything that made sense. Maybe the Hellmouth was over there, like the Hellmouth, you know, like if you've seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the Hellmouth under the library that opens up and all the frightening beasts come out of it. This sort of madness of frightening beasts just flying through the air. Maybe something like that. Actually, no, I think the Hellmouth is probably more likely to be under the headquarters of the Daily Mail newspaper. But there's something frightening over there. So that was in one direction. And then down in the other direction, there was this clear view to the sea, which was giving me this great sense of history. I mean, the sense of history, really, that you get up there all the time on the moor. And it works in two ways, or maybe more. But first of all, there's the way that when you're up there, you start to see, when you get up to that high bit, you start to see remnants of old tin mines and remnants of, you know, maybe you'll see a chunk of a farmhouse from the 1300s up there remaining, just a stone from it. Something used to be part of a living room where a farming family huddled around a fire, but not a fire in the wall, but a fire in the centre of the room. So you're getting that sense of history, but you're also looking at a clear view down the valley, and you get a sense of what we've lost, really, with our progress. It's a complicated subject, progress. I mean, what a hypocrite I am, standing here, talking into this handheld device, which will allow between 13 and 17 people worldwide to listen to this broadcast from outside a kitchen on Dartmoor. So, you know, I like some things about progress, don't we all? But you also see what we've, the mistakes we've made. You start to realise what we've lost when you look at a view like that, because there's really, I could see Paignton, this seaside conurbation in the distance, but I could also see lots of just scattered houses. That was it. And then the rest was just trees and grass, just wild valleys. And I'm not saying like the rest of Britain would look like that without modern capitalism, without the Industrial Revolution. But you do get a sense of what it would have been, what it would have been before all that. Because, you know, I couldn't see a quick fit down there. I couldn't see a Spa or a One Stop or a Tesco Metro. And I loved Dartmoor for that. And then you think more about it and you think, actually, this isn't, it's not just an unspoilt landscape. It's not as simple as that. It's a reclaimed landscape. It's one where a lot more was going on the moor, a lot more farming and mining. And then the climate changed and people kind of evacuated from the moor because the things they were doing weren't sustainable up there as the climate changed. And then nature took back over. So there's something very reassuring, particularly at this time in the 21st century, when we're all realising we've kind of fucked it up quite quickly, the planet. And but there's just something a tiny bit reassuring that, you know, maybe nature will win in the end, whatever winning is. So there's that. There was that in one direction, and you've got this big ridge with this falling afternoon sun behind me in the other direction, and the sound of this satanic wind, and then all this burbling, all these rivers. But as I looked over that ridge, I mean, I know what's over that ridge because I've walked it many times. But as in the winter, you feel like there's something different over there when it gets dark. You feel like there's something more frightening. The way I sort of think about it is it's a little bit akin to when I was six and I started to think about outer space a lot. Because when I was six, a lot of people talked about space travel. It was way more fashionable than it is now. People were into it. And I had these two realizations, these two things that made my head hurt when I was six, or maybe seven. Could have been seven. And so one, the first one was that I was going to die someday. I'd not really thought about that. What made me think about it was my dad drove our beat up Morris Marina. He had a Morris Minor that cost a tenner, and then that was fucking great. He still kind of maintains that's the best car he's ever had. And then he got a succession of quite crap Morris Marinas that broke down a lot, but they didn't break down, weirdly, when we drove to Italy, because we've got relatives in Italy. And we'd stay at a campsite near our relative's house. My dad, once he did it all in one go, Nottinghamshire to Tuscany in a Morris Minor, stopped in a lay-by for a sleep, couldn't get to sleep, thought, fuck it, I'll just carry on. And So we got all the way to Tuscany. And I think it might have been this very first time we went, or the second time. Went up to this village above the campsite called Castagneto. And it was full of very, very old people. The oldest people I'd seen in my life. Apart from maybe Flo Tansley, who lived next door to us in Brinsley, in Notts. And I think Flo was about maybe like 80, 85. Seemed incredibly old to me, and she died a year or two after that. She asked my dad to throw her in the pond across the road when she died, which he didn't do. Didn't honour that dying wish. Left it to her family to arrange the funeral instead. But apart from Flo, these were the oldest people that I'd seen in Castagneto. And I think they were just super old people because they had healthy lifestyles in the sun, eating really good tomatoes and drinking a fair bit. Which I don't think harms you. If you do it in the right way. I mean, I remember, I'm going slightly off subject here. You might notice I slightly go off subject and then sometimes come back to the subject that I've started on. But I remember meeting a couple of very old men in 2005 when I stayed at the wonderful Shakespeare and Co. bookshop in Paris, and I was lucky enough to have dinner with the owner, George, who was 93 at the time. Used to not cut his hair, he would set fire to it when it got a bit long with a candle, easier than cutting it. And he was there, and Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the poet, was there as well. Just in the 15 years that's passed, I've become more and more aware of what an amazing privilege this was to talk to these two amazing men who run bookshops on either side of the globe, really. San Francisco City Lights was the bookshop, and still is, and that Ferlinghetti ran. And someone else who was there, a student who was staying in the shop, asked the two of them what the secret of their longevity was, and they said, "We have one beer every day, just one, no more, one more, one beer, that's it." I think it's as valid a theory for old age, for staying old and healthy and living a long life, as any I've heard. You're also supposed to drink a lot of water. But I think these Italians in Castagneto drank wine quite a bit. Nice, good wine there. But I looked at them and I looked at their skin, and I said to my mum, what happens after that? And my mum told me that they died, and that was the first time I'd really thought about it. People die. And then I started thinking about what happens after you die, and I couldn't get my head around that. And it was one of these two topics that started making my head hurt when I was 6 or 7. And the other one was thinking about outer space, because think about the galaxy, solar system. And then I think about, okay, so what's after that? And then what's after that? And I remember asking family members this, and they said, well, there's nothing. And asking, well, is there some kind of wall at the end of it all, where it all stops? And they said, well, no, because it doesn't stop. It goes on forever. And this just made my head hurt so much. I just could not process it. I mean, it made my head hurt at 6, and it still kind of makes my head hurt at 45. But I just think about that a little bit when I look at High Dartmoor, when I'm walking on there and I look over the ridge on a winter's day, when that small bit of light you've been offered is going away. And I think that's where it all ends. There's nothing beyond that. It's just darkness. But then I remember, I know factually this isn't true. I know what's up there. There's, you know, if you keep walking, you get to Oakhampton, which has got Waitrose. So it's not true. But it feels like that. And there's something pleasantly frightening up there. A pleasing terror. That's a phrase I come back to a lot when I'm writing about landscape. It's the name of an M.R. James story. M.R. James wrote about a very different landscape to this. But I think there's a pleasing terror to M.R. James' country, which is East Anglia, Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridgeshire. But I think there's another pleasing terror here, and I like it, but it does frighten me. The eternal voice of this river frightens me, but I also like it. And I'm going to spend a lot of time walking through it for the next, for a long time, because I feel like there's never enough you can know about the moor. I've written a lot about it, but I'm still a novice. I'm still a beginner. There's a lot more I want to know. But I'm going to spend a lot of time walking through it this winter, because you never feel worse after a walk. And I think that especially applies for me when it comes to Dartmoor.